Welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa, I'm your host, and in today's episode, I'm speaking with fitness trainer Ryan Jory. Ryan and I speak about his online chin-up program, the difference between training efficiently and training maximally, and many other training tips. I hope you enjoy the episode, and please, if you like this show, subscribe and give us a rating or take a screenshot and share the episode on your social media. Thank you so much, and as always, if you want personalized help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we are your go-to coaches. Just hit the contact link in the show notes for more details. Now on to my conversation with Ryan. Ryan Jory, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
My absolute pleasure. I can't wait to talk about all things strength training or personal training in general, but I would love to hear from you to begin with. What's the number one thing you're excited for our listeners to learn today?
Just a better way for female strength training. Basically, I feel like most females tend to do way too much with stuff. I like to focus on a more approach where we're focusing on doing as much as necessary rather than as much as possible.
Minimal effective dose. I like that.
Minimal effective dose is not the same as minimal results. So it's like, how much can we keep going with?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we're going to get hopefully into that a little bit more in terms of optimal training volume, maximal recoverable training volume. That's a difficult word to say. Yeah. And sort of the minimal effective dose. But yes, I love it. That's a really great takeaway. Hopefully that people can walk away from the show today. But tell us, how did you get into strength training?
I played football and a couple sports back in high school. I was definitely like the super skinny kid. So initially it was just a way to kind of get bigger to be like an actual quality football player, which not to say I was quality, but just actually play. From there, I went to college, kind of developed an eating disorder. Cause I gained kind of like the freshman 50. And so from there, by losing a bunch of weight, it kind of got me the idea, like maybe I wanted to be a personal trainer. So originally then I switched my major over to being a physical therapy assistant, which to me seemed close enough to personal training. Didn't realize till I graduated that it really wasn't the same as personal training, but the benefit was it still gave me a background in like kinesiology and anatomy and stuff like that. So then a few years later, when I did decide to finally make the jump into personal training, I felt like I had quite a background already.
Right. Yeah, no, that I love what you say about your personal investment and interest in it. And I keep saying that, but I believe the best coaches are the ones that have had their own sort of struggles with certain things and can just relate better to many people. So I assume that now when someone comes to you who is overweight or who has an eating disorder or who wants to be an athlete or whatever, you can kind of put yourself a little bit into their shoes and therefore work with them even closer and create a better connection. So I really think that's a great why. And so now tell us, I know you do online training, but you also have your own facility. So please share with us where that is and how your online training works and all that.
Yeah, so I'm in Billings, Montana. I don't technically have my own facility. I train out of a commercial gym, but we do have like our own room where I train pretty much entirely female training classes. I have a couple one-on-one male clients, but for the most part, we just do small group individualized personal training for females. And then with online, yeah, I have my jorystrengthtraining.com. Where I just do, online training. So we're focusing mostly on strength. I have a couple people though training for like marathons or Spartans or things like that. So it's just whatever is that person's goal.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, I love that. Sounds very flexible. And I think it's great to nowadays have the opportunity to train online. I would always say if people have the opportunity to train hybrid, so like meeting with a personal trainer once a week or at least once a month, I think that's so valuable. And of course it might be surprising for some people to hear that me saying that, because I'm all over the place. I'm not somewhere in a fixed position, so I unfortunately don't have clients that I train hybrid. I only do online, but I do think that there is just something about being in the presence of your personal trainer, and even with video feedback and so on, it's not the same as if you actually get the tactile cues, as if you actually get the, like literally that full on experience. So anyone listening, my recommendation would be if you think you know it all, if you think, oh, I've been training for 6, 10, whatever years, I don't need a personal trainer, I don't need to invest in those sessions. Let me tell you, over the last couple of years, twice I invested in meeting with the online coach that I had at the time. So I flew to Germany to visit my family, and then within Germany, I traveled several hours to go and see her. And her session, it was like 45 minutes, and it cost me $250 or something like that for that. It was so worth it. I would do it
That's
again,
invaluable,
like
yeah.
today, tomorrow, like any. Honestly, I was like, oh my gosh, I wish I would live close to you all the time, but it wouldn't be good for my wallet. But
Yeah.
every time I mean, I have a degree in exercise science. It's not like I'm someone who's like brand new to working out, but I learned so much. So if you're listening to this and you're ever on the fence of should I wish for my birthday for a personal training session or for this new handbag, go for the personal training session.
Oh, for sure. Well, and it's exactly like we can do so much with online training. Actually, when I first got into online training was right during COVID, because initially I never liked the idea of online training. I didn't think the quality would be the same, but then, COVID kind of forced my hand there. And there's definitely some growing pains when you're learning with online training. But again, once you get going, like you mentioned with the video review, like that really to me kind of bridges the gap between in person and online. Like there is still that benefit to in person because it's quick, it's in the moment. You're like, you can immediately just show that person what you want. But yeah, with video review, we can do so much with there because we can still break things down. It's actually kind of nice even too because you can actually then slow it down
Yeah.
and kind of get a better idea of like, did I see what I think I just saw? And then kind of go back and replay it and then show them too. Because that's one of the other things, like we can demonstrate what someone's doing something wrong, but it's just so much more powerful, I think, to be able to like slow down a video and show, okay, like see here where you're shifting your weight to the side or you're, rounding your back or whatever. And then they can feel, they can make that connection to like, okay, when I felt this, that's what that looks like. That's what I need to be fixing.
100%. No, that's a really, really great point in terms of slowing things down. I love that you're highlighting that. And so yeah, let's go back to what we kind of touched on initially in regards to training efficiently or training maximally. So how can someone listening to this find out if they're training efficiently or just balls to the walls and giving it a little bit too much?
Yeah. So initially, what I have most people look at, assuming that we're starting from no experience, I always tell them like, "What? Okay. What does your schedule look like? What's the maximum amount of sessions you could do?" And then we subtract one or two from there to start. So I say like, it's always easier both physically and from a mental perspective to add sessions later if we realize that we're not doing enough. I find it very demotivating if someone say wants to start at 5 sessions a week, within a couple of weeks we're like already cutting it down. They can almost get this feeling like they're being punished for that, and it's not being punished. We're trying to meet them where they're at. But there is just something intrinsic to that where it just doesn't feel like a positive effect versus, if we started at 2 sessions a week and we add on a third, like that feels motivating. They're like, awesome, I'm succeeding here. Like they're having to give me more versus having to like punish them in their eyes. So that's where I'd look at if it was a very basic person. If it's a more advanced person, a lot of it just comes down to like, are your numbers moving in the right way? So if we're tired all the time, but your lifts aren't going up, we know that we're probably doing too much. If you're not tired and your lifts aren't going up, then okay, maybe we look like maybe we're not doing quite enough or we need to adjust intensity or something. But I just see so many people start with these balls to the wall programs that are like, 4 sets of 10 different exercises 6 days a week. And it's like, you were sitting on the couch 2 weeks ago. You probably don't need that much to be seeing a change right now.
Yeah, and then you get injured, or as you mentioned, it's just you might be able to stick with that for 4 weeks, and then you're like, oh, I hate this exercise
Exactly.
thing. It's really cutting into my family time, and then you're having this negative connotation, and your family's blaming the exercise on you never being home, even though if you cut that down into half. So yeah, I like that. But yeah, going to the other end of the spectrum that you mentioned there as well, if someone's listening and they're like, okay, I'm training 4 to 5 days per week. I'm not seeing the results when I am training. I'm giving it my all. But I don't necessarily feel like I'm super drenched in sweat or anything like that. Is there a chance that they're still overtraining? How do you kind of assess that, or how do you get them moving if they're feeling like they're plateauing?
Yeah, it could be again. I think a lot of times when people say that they're giving it their all and we're not seeing those changes, a lot of times that's because it's a little different that if you know that you've got, 25 other sets left to do later in the day, you're not going to be able to push quite as hard on that first set. Whereas, if I told you we're only going to do one set of squats today, you're definitely going to get way more out of that. And for some people, we've done that as simple as like we've cut back to 2 to 3 sets on most of their major exercises and numbers just start blowing up because they take the gas or they take the brakes off. They realize like they can push so much harder and actually feel like they have to because they're like, if I'm going to get something out of this workout, I need to really push here. And again, there is just something unconscious to that too, where if you know you have 5 sets, you're probably just going to leave a little bit more in the tank because you're trying not to die on the remaining 4 sets.
Yeah, very, very good point. Most people do that. So it's really quite funny, actually, if you I'm currently visiting someone of a former client here in Florida, and I have the pleasure of training with her from time to time. And so even last year we trained together, and it was like she was like, "Lisa, every time I think I'm fail or I'm supposed to do 8 to 10 reps, and you're telling me at the end of the 10 reps, I think you can do another three." She always has more in the tank than she thinks, and we all have that like kind of cap in our minds. Well, last time I did 12 reps on this. That means I can only do 12 or 13 this week. But if you were to block out the numbers on the plates, if you were to tell a person, just go, it's probably quite different than if you actually see the number written in front of you.
That's actually so that's one of the reasons that I do love online or in-person training too, is that you can kind of trick people with that sometimes. Whereas online training, if I tell them 200, they're going to load 200 because they know that. I still think back to one of my first online or my first in-person clients who told me I can't deadlift over 150, like it's impossible, I can't do it. So we just started chatting. I got her confused, or not confused, I should, but just kind of got her a little bit distracted. I loaded different plates on there. I put like 160, and she did it for five, and probably still could have done about five more reps. It's like weird. So you couldn't do 150. And like you said, it's like as soon as they don't know what the weight is, it's just amazing how much more that opens up.
It's sort of that whole the first person running the 100 meters under 10 seconds, and
Exactly. Yep.
then suddenly everyone's like, "Oh, this is possible. Okay, I guess I
Yep.
can do that too."
So we have in our group training room, we have a room or a board on the wall. There's like the 150-pound deadlift club, the 200-pound deadlift club, 250. And then we have one for like first chin-up, weighted chin-ups, more than five chin-ups. And honestly, that's one of the biggest reasons I have this, because when you step in and you see like, oh wow, so and so did this much weight, it just makes that a lot less intimidating. Whereas, 8, 10 years ago when I started at Granite, there really wasn't anyone you'd ever like. I almost never saw a female on the floor deadlift over like 135 pounds. You just didn't see it. Now we've got, so my class is probably alone like 30 some women who can deadlift 200 or so. And it's like, because you broke down that barrier. People aren't afraid of it. So it's like, oh well, this is just a thing we do. Like actually. Sadly, now they don't even get that excited about 200. I mean, like it is still cool the first time you get it, but it's not just like, oh my God, I can do it. 'Cause you're like, well, shit, so and so can, do 250 or 275, but we just keep raising the level.
It's awesome when you are able to see what's possible at whatever age, whatever gender, and so on. Of course, sometimes it can be a little bit intimidating still, but
Oh, for
great.
sure.
You mentioned chin-ups and pull-ups there, and that's actually something that caught my eye when I looked at your content, that you have a specific pull-up and chin-up or chin-up ebook, which I love because I often hear from clients, especially female clients, "Hey, I want to be able to do my first pull-up." So I'm really interested in hearing, number one, what prompted you to write this ebook, and number two, yeah, what are the main exercises and things to look out for so that we can work towards our first chin-up or augmenting more?
Yeah, I think I was initially just a little bit biased as a trainer because chin-ups have always been one of my favorite movements. And training a lot more females, you just start to very quickly realize that's such a major goal for so many women. Again, especially here in the States where they don't even do it in gym class. Like boys do chin-ups, girls do the flexed arm hang. And it kind of sets this artificial like ceiling with the idea that like women don't do chin-ups. And again, yes, most women don't do chin-ups on day one, but with enough practice, I feel like the majority of people can do it. So over the years, we just started pushing that and made that more and more of a goal. And again, putting the board on the wall was just because it was just something people really wanted to achieve, and it just gave made it a little bit more special to get there. As far as like what people aren't doing enough of with chin-ups, a lot of it's just direct chin-up work. Like I do think, doing rows, doing lat pull down, stuff like that helps. But for most people, they're just not very skilled. I find a lot of people initially are just pulling too much with their biceps. We need to learn how to like actually incorporate the lats, how to maintain good abdominal tension and make it a full body movement. I think, again, another misconception about the chin-ups, that's it's just a upper body exercise. And really, if it's done correctly, it is a full body exercise. So learning how to generate that tension, doing more stuff like leg-assisted chin-ups, hollow holds, stuff like that, that's practicing the chin-up position while you're building that strength, I think makes a huge difference. I will
Really,
say we almost
really
never do machine-assisted chin-ups. I find that to be not very helpful.
cool. Gotcha. And I will be the first to put my hand up and saying that I used to do chin-ups with just my biceps basically for years, and realized through injury or through pain rather, that I was not doing them correctly, and it's taken me, or it is still taking me, some time to relearn that movement pattern. So I notice after a few reps, automatically my biceps are wanting to take over again. I'm like, nope, stop. Okay, you need to feel your lats again. Hop down. But yeah, what I really like is also like negative reps. In terms of like
Understand.
you jump on a box and you jump up, and then you only lower yourself down. I think that can be really, really helpful. Often more helpful. Yeah, often more helpful than using a band, actually, in my opinion, because sometimes with the band, you're not engaging your core so well, or you're using the band, maybe you're putting the band around your knees and you're like, oh, not missing the whole point of the hollow body. So I really have like or like the negative chin-ups a lot.
Yeah,
What is
I would say like we use bands on occasion, but to me they build some strength, they just don't build the skill. And a lot of times they like increase bad habits basically. We see a lot more swinging, like you said, a lot less like hollow engagement. So there's maybe a time and a place, and sometimes if I have someone we're in more of a hypertrophy phase, we might use them just because we can get in some reps. But if we're actually like main goal trying to attack the chin up, I don't think they're super helpful.
Yeah. You mentioned that as mistakes, and what are some, like, aside or outside of the pull-up world necessarily, what are some general mistakes you see with people coming to you, or maybe even just that you observe in the space where that people might fall into in terms of strength training?
I think one is just doing not is either doing entirely unilateral work or doing no unilateral work at all. Actually, I swear, so like 7, 8 years ago, I tore my meniscus, and I think a lot of that was just that we were skiing, and I had not been incorporating almost any unilateral work, and it really imposed that on me of like you need to at least include some. It shouldn't be your whole workout. I don't like the idea of taking all your bilateral stuff out. I think bilateral is super helpful and can be very healthy if it's done appropriately, but just finding that balance. Again, most people just suck at unilateral work, and we tend to avoid things that we're not good at. So it's easy to be like, I don't need to do step ups this week, or I don't need to do anything lateral this week. But even just incorporating like 2 to 3 sets a week of something like single leg deadlift or a lateral squat, I think can make a big difference. And again, I hate the term injury prevention. So it's not that it's injury prevention, but let's just say you're going to feel better and move better. I still think that's a worthy thing to shoot for.
100%, and also, basically everybody has a stronger and a weaker side, and if we always train bilaterally, automatically or most of the time, our stronger side is just going to eventually take over or do most of the work. And so, unless we sort of try to work against that, I mean, I don't think I don't really think we will ever succeed at being completely balanced throughout our entire body, because we write with one hand, we lean on one side if we're driving or whatever. Life is
You
just
only have one heart, you can never be fully balanced.
not. There you go. But generally speaking, we need to have awareness of, okay, this is my slightly weaker side. Maybe I should start with that side, or like you mentioned, put a little bit more emphasis in there. So yeah, I really like that point. And in terms of injury, quote-unquote injury prevention, what are some other things to look out for, or maybe people are doing wrong when it comes to not looking out for that? It would be things like, I don't know, breathing or not warming up or anything like that.
I think my video, 1 second, my video should be okay. Their video's back. Yeah, I do believe in warm-ups. Again, research is mixed on that. Anecdotally, and just from 10 years of training experience, I find that people feel better and move better with the warm-up. Again, there's going to be times where you've only got 30 minutes and maybe you skip it or you very much expedite it, but almost never do I find 5 to 6 minutes of doing a warm-up to be a bad thing. At the very least, like the bar is just going to feel better. Like if you're going right into bench, it's usually kind of feels like crap the first couple sets unless you've got something of a warm up. So if for no reason other than that, I think that that's very helpful. And the literature supports this is, in my opinion, still is the biggest thing for injury is just like avoiding volume spikes. You get people where, you know, they haven't ran in 6 years and they start running 5 miles a day. They, you know, take 3 weeks off of squats and they go right back into 4 sets 3 times a week or something. It's looking with a short-term mindset rather than a long-term mindset and realizing like, it's not like you have a competition coming up. There's no reason you can't ease into something and add a few extra weeks. Like even just taking a couple extra weeks, like easing into running or easing into whatever lift you're trying to do, I've never found that to be a bad thing.
Yeah, really, really good point. And I think in regards to the warm up also, even from a mental perspective, like many people come directly from work and they're still like going through their to-do list and like just you're just distracted. Or if you're good training first thing in the morning, you're still half asleep, and then 5 minutes later, loading, I don't know, 200 pounds on your back for your next squat. Like even again, as you're saying, even if the literature doesn't always necessarily support it, I mean, there is good research showing that at least we should have our heart rate up and being a little bit warm in terms of body temperature. But yeah, I think again, 5 minutes, what's that out of your hour that's like. And not
Exactly. Like, I think people looked at that, there was a period maybe like the early 2010s where people were doing these like 30 to 40 minute warm-ups. And I agree, like that's insanity. That's not even a warm-up at that point. Again, 5 minutes is like everyone has 5 extra minutes. Like it's generally what I just have my people do is like a circuit. We pick 2 to 3 exercises addressing the main things we want to incorporate as far as qualities that day. Do 2 rounds as a circuit, boom, done. It takes, I said, maybe 5, 6 minutes, and then you're right into what you're doing.
Yeah, 100%. Awesome. So yeah, that was one of the ways to help prevent injuries. Any other sort of tips or things that you'd like to incorporate?
As far as actually avoiding injury, I would just say listening to your body. Again, the intensity thing, like we do need to push to a certain level of intensity to see changes. However, that just varies from person to person. Like if it's one of my first like powerlifting clients where if we touched anything over like 80% for her, we could do it for about 2 to 3 weeks and then she'd start to have back issues. So we'd spend almost all of her time in that like 70 to 80% range, ramp right up, and she'd still see a PR every time we did that, even though we weren't hitting heavy weights. Some people we need to be hitting something heavy every single week to see a change. So I think a lot of that is just looking at your results. And that's why I think it's super important to be tracking your workouts or having a coach that's tracking your workouts. And just going based off the results of stuff is starting to tank downwards and we make adjustments. Or if you're starting to feel bad, like maybe we realize, like, okay, maybe, benching 3 times a week is too much for you, or maybe, whatever lift it is, and just making adjustments and not being overly tied or emotional to any one attribute of your workout.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And maybe even if you spot that fatigue, like looking at your other factors, like are you sleeping enough? Are you eating enough? Are
That's
you
a good one as well, yeah.
fueling your workouts? What's your emotional load? Are you do you have like a deadline at work at the moment? I think often what's difficult for people to accept is I did this 2 years ago or 10 years ago and it was no issue. I feel like I should be able to do that now. And we fail to grasp that it's not just, I'm not talking about age related decline. I'm just talking about different stages in life. You know, you might have a kid now and only sleep 4 hours and wake up 3 times and whatever. That's a very, you can't demand the same of your body than when you were 23 and all you had to think about was food, sleep, and training. It's just like your body doesn't work that way. We have,
It's
yeah.
almost like your PR should be just based on the current year. It's not, you benched 300 pounds when you were 18, now you're 42, things are different. Like you could still get back to that point, but just not assuming that you're already there is probably the best method.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah, Ryan, I'm curious in regards to like goal setting. So when someone says to you they would rather, they're not really too concerned about strength, they just want to train for hypertrophy and gain muscle, or then you have someone else who's like, I don't really care about more muscle, I just want to be stronger. What are some differences in terms of your programming, how you approach either or the other?
Yeah, so if someone has more of a hypertrophy goal, we're definitely going to be a little stricter on the nutrition. Obviously, nutrition matters from a strength perspective, but that's more in terms of driving the recovery ability. Versus obviously, yeah, if they have an aesthetic goal, like we just have to be very strict on the nutrition because that's where that's mostly going to come from. As far as differences in programming, again, I still just go based on what that person's responding to. So I have like one girl, for example, where her deadlifts and her chin-ups go up every time we stick in the 6 to 10 range. Like that doesn't make sense from a max strength perspective, but it just works for her. And then similarly, I've had people where, we're sticking that 8 to 12 range on hypertrophy and it's not working that well, but we go to like 4 to 8 range and all of a sudden they respond to that. So I try not to be too dogmatic as far as how it looks. Like I have a general template of where I'm assuming we're going to start. Again, if it's hypertrophy, we're probably sticking most of our stuff in that 6 to 12 range. If it's strength, we're probably going 5 and lower, but I try to be open to making changes based on how that client is responding to it.
I love that. I think individualization is so big, and in the end, our N plus one, if we're our own best experiment, it's always going to fly best. And it doesn't matter if you have 99 or more studies backing something up that doesn't work for you, your body is very different. So I think what's key with that, though, is exactly like you're saying, tracking things and not flying by how am I feeling in the moment. Because sometimes people are like, oh, I'm looking in the mirror, I'm not making any progress, I need to change something. But they didn't really realize that maybe, you just ate more the last week and actually your training program is working perfectly fine. Or maybe you just hit a plateau and you just need a deload and you're going to come back stronger. So we're not going to know that unless you know what phase within your cycle you're in, or if you've actually been overreaching or not. So I really like that point of tracking.
I was talking with one of my coworkers the other day about this, where honestly, I think one of the biggest reasons to have a coach is not so much about the changes that we make. It's more knowing when to implement those changes. I think you see, when it's your own program, it's your own nutrition, it's easy to get emotional and be like, okay, I've got to change everything because I had one bad workout. Having a coach is someone who can look at this and be like, okay, you've had 15 straight good workouts. We had one where your numbers dropped off. Like, we're going to see if this trend continues before we make a change. Whereas I think it's easy when it's your own program to be like, all right, scrapping this whole thing and doing a whole brand new program. So a lot of times it's just the person that's not pushing the button, I think, is important.
Love that. Absolutely love that. And not just in terms of training, obviously in terms of nutrition also, but yeah,
Oh, very much so, yeah.
both things. And I think also there's just something about focusing on your specialty. We all have our gifts in life, and not everybody's gift is nutrition or is training. And so if you can hand that over to someone else to a large extent and free up your brain for your true power, or for being more there with your family, and you don't need to think about should I change something about my program, or is this actually working?
Exactly.
It's so absolutely worth it. So yeah, I think that's a really great point. Now, in regards to the specifics of the programs, do you have any I mean, obviously it depends on how often someone can train, but you personally, do you have a preference in regards to splits? Like, do you love full body splits? Do you love upper lower push pull legs, or even body part?
I tend to do closer to a full body for most people. I'd say a good percentage of my people are 3 times a week. Like, in fact, the in-person class I do, every single person is 3 times a week. So generally 3 times a week we do is like one day that's more squat focused with like a deadlift accessory and then some sort of upper body stuff. Day two is out pretty much always just full upper body. And then day three would be like a deadlift focus with a secondary squat exercise and more upper body. So generally we're hitting upper body 3 times a week. Again, I train all those people are females. So generally, I find most females can hit upper body 3 times a week. And then we really push like squat on one day, really push deadlift on another. I always find that's a good starting point. Again, over time, if we're thinking we can do a little bit more, sometimes I'll give them a little bit that they do outside of the class, or just hitting some like light accessories and stuff like that. But I think a lot of people really overlook what you can get out of 3 times a week. Like if your nutrition is on point and you're pushing yourself appropriately, 3 times a week is just money. You have tons of time still for recovery. You can, I don't know if you, I think you've had Josh Hillis on here before, I can't remember, but Josh Hill has talked about in his book years ago about how thinking of your meal prep and your shopping as being like another workout. So if they're doing a
Love
three
that.
times a week workout, it's so easy to have a fourth thing. It's like, perfect. Get to the grocery store, get your meals prepped, and now you're like set up for the rest of the week. And it's still just as important, if not more, as all of your other workouts. You've just got the schedule for it. Like you said, when you're lifting 6 days a week and you have 5 kids, like you might not have time to do that.
That's a really great point. I've actually not heard that before, as thinking of your meal prep as a fourth workout. I love that.
It's
Very
his,
cool.
he's got a book, Fat Loss Happens on Monday, and it's fantastic reading. It's as a beginning trainer, I use so much of this stuff. I mean, I still use a lot of the stuff, but I mean, I was like referencing it constantly. I feel like it's a beginning trainer.
Very, very cool. I'll be sure to look that up and maybe even put that in the show notes for the listeners. So, I mean, you're mentioning the importance here of nutrition. Do you generally give some, even like if someone's like, I don't want to track my food, but like, what are five things I can look out for, especially when it comes to pre and post-workout nutrition? Tell me.
Yeah, I generally try and at least get them to focus on protein. Again, whether that's tracked or not, and I have some people where we're not actually tracking calories, but they just send me a screenshot of like their notes app, and it's like just making sure they're getting some sort of protein source at each meal. And again, I try to not overcomplicate nutrition. Again, I technically train one retired bodybuilder, but I'm not training bodybuilders, so it's like if we can get the basics to work, and it's just like let's make those work as long as possible. And if down the road, if we have to get a little more hyper specific, awesome, we'll do that because again, we're going to go based on what the results are dictating. But it's like if you can just try and get a protein source at every meal and lose 10, 20 pounds, like why wouldn't we do that first before we get crazy advanced?
Yeah, and also helping the recovery for sure. Because I mean, you're putting so much hard work into building the muscle, and if you're not supplying your body with the building blocks, it's kind of like you might. It's basically working out half the time or whatever it might be. So it's a little bit silly, and you're going to be more sore if you're not getting all that. Those good building blocks.
So I actually had a former client who moved away who texted me, and I haven't trained him in probably 4 years, but he said that like when we were training, he never really focused on his nutrition. He's got like a super stressful sales job, so part of his issue is he was just always eating out with clients, and so of course you're gonna be eating these like really indulgent meals. But he told me he finally started focusing on protein. He's been getting in like 200 a day, and he's like, dude, I just started benching again like 3 weeks ago. And I'm hitting 200 pounds. It's like he just feels like it's like a cheat code at this point. And I was like, yes, this is what we told you a long time ago, and it is shocking how many times just increasing protein, what that does for people's strength results. Like all of a sudden numbers just start flying up, and it's like the program didn't change. Like what you did to recover outside the gym is what changed.
100%. I would love to like highlight this in bold colors here. I really, really think that's an important building block. And I have seen, let's say, a similar performance enhancing fact when it comes to sleep. If someone's suddenly they're like, oh, I'm fine. I've always gotten by on 5 hours a night. I don't need to sleep more. And then you're like, well, let's just come on, please work on that. Please trust me on this. And they're like, whoa, I feel like a new human.
I know the sleep one is tough because I train almost entirely parents, and it is really tough when you work all day, and then you've got kids practices after school, and then of course the only time they want to talk to you is like 9:30, 10 o'clock at night when you're supposed to be in bed. So we try and compromise there as much as we can, but it's like every night that we can get a little bit better sleep is just going to be slightly better progress. And admittedly, it's not going to be perfect. Like your kids are going to come in at 11:30 some night and really need to talk to you, and that happens. But just trying to minimize those and not have it be like a sitting there staring at your phone at midnight every single night.
Yeah, precisely. That's exactly it. I think is if we even just eliminate that mindless scrolling in bed in the first thing in the morning and last thing at night, we can save so much time and, more importantly, mind brain cells and just have a more pleasant day altogether. But I want to go back a little bit into the training aspect. In regards to the specific setup, are you also incorporating any kind of cardio in your training with the clients, or is it kind of more like on an as needed? Like if someone says, hey, I want to run a 10K, or I just want to be like well-rounded, how do you approach cardio?
A little bit. I'm more similar to Polly. I'm more focused on their steps. Now, obviously, if we have a specific goal, so I have like a couple of clients who are training for like half marathons and stuff this year, then I'm more specific and I'm writing in like in my app like what they're supposed to be doing as far as like running or whatever kind of cardio stuff they're doing. And then again, for like fat loss people, I do think sometimes like doing finishers and stuff like that can be helpful. But I don't use them probably as much as I used to because I think the nutrition matters so much more. And I have a theory, and my friend Landon, who's a dietitian, I've talked about this where I don't know that actually like finishers actually help fat loss as much as we think, or is it more that it puts you in the mindset of feeling like you're in a fat loss phase, and then that makes you like subconsciously better with your nutrition. So it's, I don't think it's the actual exercise. I think it's more like you make better food decisions later in the day, and then you give credit to that like really hard finisher you did. I don't think the 50 calories you burned on the assault bike is really what did the big
I
thing.
so agree with that, honestly. And also just from you finish your workout maybe with a bit more of a sweat, and people are like, oh, this was a good workout. Whereas if you finish, like I'm someone, I don't sweat very easily at all. So oftentimes I'll walk out of the gym, I'm like, I don't even need to put on deodorant. I literally don't smell at all. Like, did I even do anything? Which by now I know and appreciate that that's not a good sign for a good workout anyway, our level of sweat. But yeah, many people associate how much they sweat or how exhausted they feel with a good workout. So if you give them just that little glimpse of like, yeah, let's do those 3 minutes with, I don't know, five sprints on the assault bike. Mentally, I can imagine that it has a big effect.
Well, and I'm trying to remember the name of the scientist. I guess the name doesn't matter, but they talk about the peak end rule where people tend to remember the high point of an experience and they remember the end of the experience. So there is something to putting that at the end of the workout. And you might have just done, like you said, breathing drills and yoga the whole time, but you finish on that sprint. So like, man, that was tough. And it's like they forget all the easy stuff they did at the beginning. So again, there is a case to be made for just putting their favorite exercise at the end of a workout. And honestly, I think even I need to remember that more sometimes, like changing the exercise order just to make sure you're finishing on that high point.
Yeah, definitely. I do think where it gets quote unquote dangerous is if we're dipping too much into that loaded finisher. So I come from a CrossFit background. I had to stop several years ago, 2018, when I was injured in numerous places in my body. Thankfully, I'm so thankful for that now because it helped me learn a lot better. Yeah, I have seen and know from personal experience how great I felt after like a finisher of I don't know, really heavy deadlifts and wall balls and kipping pull-ups or so. And then you're like, oh, this was so great. I can't hardly move for the rest of the day, but this was so good. And yeah, if we're starting to load that at the end of a workout where the body and the mind is already fatigued, that's I think where we're so prone to injuries and where the central nervous system is just already so taxed, and then you're loading that more literally with more weight. I think that's quite
Well,
dangerous.
and it's even too like how often you're using it. Because you even look at like early CrossFit, like early 2000s CrossFit used it like twice a week or so, which like that's
Exactly.
awesome. Like if you're doing a finisher twice a week, you're working out 4 times a week, like that's probably awesome. But when it becomes every single workout has to finish that way, I mean, A, you're not actually experiencing true high intensity because you're never recovering enough to actually be able to access that. But you have this perceived, like high perceived exertion because you are tired because you're coming into that pretty tired. And it's like, again, I'd rather use that sparingly and use it well versus just throw something at the end of a workout just to get that sensation every time.
That's a really great point. I mean, a lot of CrossFit very much depends on programming, and yeah, many of the finishers used to be like every minute on the minute, so also very much structured as opposed to just as fast as you can, as heavy as you can all the time. So yeah, not banging on
Well, that's like,
CrossFit in general.
and any coach can give you, 4 different exercises for 50 reps, do it as fast as possible. Like, there's a time and a place where maybe that works well and maybe for fun sometimes, but to me that's not progress. That's
Yeah.
just randomness. I think we really saw that during COVID with a lot of online trainers. They'd be like, 100 push-ups, 100 burpees, 100 this, and you're like, okay, what's the progression here? Like that's, yeah, they'll be set, tired and sweaty, but like I could also have you run your face into a wall 100 times. You're gonna not feel good. Like it's not coaching to me.
No, it's not structured, no strategy behind it, absolutely not. Well, Ryan, to finish off, I'd love to hear, aside from pull-ups, you personally, what kind of what exercises are your favorites? You already touched on you'd like to have squats and deadlifts and so on in your program, but for you personally, maybe something that's a little bit more out of the box, what are some of your favorites?
Yeah, so I weirdly enough, and I'm not doing my current program, but I love Turkish get-ups. I originally, when I got started in training, was really like I did Strong First kettlebell certification, and that was actually the goal I chased for a while, was to be able to do 106-pound Turkish get-up, which I did exactly one time.
So
And it's not everyone's favorite exercise. I honestly don't use it with a lot of people because it's more mentally taxing than physical. Like I think it's awesome. It helps a lot of qualities, but not everyone has the mindset to want to like focus so much on an exercise. They'd rather just, pick up a heavy weight, set it down type of thing. And Turkish skip's a little more intellectual, I guess.
you definitely need to be focused for those. It's sometimes like, oh, which leg am I bending again? Is it the other one? Which arm am I holding? Oh,
They
you
get
got
halfway down,
one
they're like,
wrong.
wait, this arm goes where again? It's a little more intensive of an exercise. Again, I don't think it's a necessary exercise, but I think it can be a very beneficial exercise. And I just personally like the challenge of it.
Love it. Yeah, and for coordination, definitely a good one. Thank you. I hope some of the listeners will try a Turkish get up, but more importantly, I hope that they will go and check out your ebook, especially the chin up the chin up ebook, and also your online program in general. And just overall, I want to thank you for your time. This has been a very, very insightful conversation.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Ryan. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow on Instagram or YouTube. And remember, if you want personalized help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we'd love to guide you. One more thing before you go, if you're looking for premium supplements, our partner, Fat Muscle Project, has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more, and feel free to use our code NCL at the checkout. Thank you for listening.